Sure.
However,
you were posted away to RMC.
Then I was posted as an instructor at RMC. Oh no! Before that, I had to take my squadron down to Wolf's Cove, Quebec, and pick up a batch of German prisoners that had just been sent out on a ship from England, and I had to take them up to Gravenhurst.
This is 1940, then, I take it, by then.
Yes. And I had to take them up to Gravenhurst, where they were. An internment camp was made, and I had to guard them with my squadron until the Home Guard, or whatever it was called.
Well, the Veterans Guard.
The Veterans Guard had been built up and sufficiently to be able to take over.
Mm-hmm.
However, while I was at the guarding these prisoners, Brigadier Stewart, who afterwards became Chief of the General Staff, Major General Stewart, he came up and he knew me quite well, and he said, "What are you doing up here guarding German prisoners?" And he was down at RMC at the time, and he then sent for me to go to RMC as an instructor.
That would be Ken Stewart.
That's Ken Stewart.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm. So. I went to RMC as an instructor, and I must admit that I took a keen interest in my work, but I didn't like the idea of staying as an instructor at RMC for the rest of the war.
Mm-hmm.
And it was rather frustrating, although I did take my job seriously and I worked very hard, and I think as an instructor I was well, almost successful. And then, to my great surprise, the headquarters decided that they were going to raise a tank brigade, an army tank brigade, and under General Worthington. And there were already two regiments, but they needed a third. And as one of the militia regiments in Calgary, the Calgary Regiment, was a tank, a militia tank regiment, they decided to mobilize it. And then, in the course of mobilizing it, they hadn't anybody to command it. The colonel was medically unfit, and there was nobody else, and they were scraping the bottom of the barrel, and they found out that I was very well known in Calgary. So they sent for me from RMC to take command of the Calgary Regiment.
Mm-hmm.
So I got on a train and got out to Calgary as quickly as I could, and I found about 300 men attached to the district depot, and that was that. So I immediately...
You had to start from the ground up.
Yes, I had.
You weren't really taking over a militia unit. Going
no,
to the
I was starting from the ground up.
Yeah.
So I got what officers I could already from the Calgary Regiment, and that were willing to go, probably 8 or 10. And then I toured Alberta, went to various training schools and one thing and another, and... picked up the remainder of the officers, I think there were 40 in all. Anyway, somehow or other I gathered together, and then I got recruits from all the places that I could, and I finally was short about 150 men, and I was due to go take them down to Camp Borden by the 15th of February, I think.
1940 or 41?
That would be 41, I suppose.
41, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And I got 150 volunteers from the infantry training center there. Of course, these volunteers were people that had been kicked in the backside and told to volunteer, you see.
I was going to say, were they all the left-footers and no good...
They arrived, and yeah. I immediately told them, I said, all you fellows have a certain amount of training. A lot of my men have no training. I said, this unit has a large proportion of NCOs, and every one of you have an opportunity to become an NCO in very short order. And they all turned out to be absolutely first class. Mm. And I must say that I was very, very fortunate in getting some of the finest fellows and the finest officers that you could possibly get. And we got down to Borden and we got organized. We still had no tanks, of course. But I got everybody thoroughly well organized. And then we trained, and the other two units hadn't any tanks either. But I'd had more experience than the other two colonels, although their regiments had been in existence for a couple of years and mine was brand new. I had enough experience to be able to catch up to them in pretty short order.
What had happened, meantime, what had happened to the Lord Strathcona's horse? You'd completely...
Well, now...
They had gone their own way, of course.
While I was away, they decided that the First Hussars was not going to go to England after all. So they, two squadrons, the squadron of Strathcona's went back to Strathcona's, and the squadron RCDs went back to the RCDs, and they formed the 5th Canadian Armoured Division. And
that was a long time off. You were lucky to get out of it then, I think.
Oh, well, no, because the 5th Canadian Armoured Division was mobilised in Camp Borden just about the same time as my first Army Tank Brigade. So anyway, Strathcona's went to the 5th Canadian Armoured Division.
Yeah.
Well, then while I was in Borden, I remember I got shingles. I got them so badly
that
they all became infected, and I had to go to hospital, and I very nearly missed going overseas. But my medical officer, who was a first-class fellow from Calgary, he got in cahoots with the medical people at the hospital, and they either antedated or postdated my going into hospital or whatever it was, so that they overcame the regulations about if you were in hospital for so long, well then you couldn't go overseas. Well, they fixed it so that. Anyway, I took the regiment overseas.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, somehow or other.
Yeah, well, I dare say you were very pleased about that.
Oh, good heavens.
Being able to do that.
Yes, yeah. Well, then we got overseas, and then we went to Salisbury Plain, and we started to get issued with tanks. And we were very busy.
Now, what sort of tanks would they be?
We got Matilda tanks.
Mm-hmm. You had none in Canada, or did you work on those old American...
Worked on those old American ones.
First World War ones.
Yes, for a little bit.
Yeah.
And there was one Valentine tank, I remember, that they sent out.
You could look at it, eh?
Oh, I took a ride in it, drove it, and then I, the two... British Army soldiers who were in charge of it, I did something wrong, so I had to buy them drinks. I remember that. But however, anyway, we trained for a while on Salisbury Plain. Then we went to Linney Head. We got our full complement of Matilda tanks, and we went to Linney Head, which was in South Wales, near Pembroke Dock. where you there's a tank range and you fired out to sea. And we did our stuff there. And then when we came back, we were moved, all of us moved down to a place in Sussex. Our headquarters was in Headley Down. And we carried on our training at Headley Down, and we did training with the 3rd Division that was over there, and various exercises with the infantry and so forth.
The Matilda tank, was that armed with a 6-pounder?
No, two pounder. And machine gun, of course. Mm-hmm. And we were just really getting going, and they were deciding to take away our Matildas and give us Churchill tanks. So we got our first 3 or 4 Churchill tanks, and then I got word that I had to go out to the Middle East as a Canadian military observer. So I nearly wept to leave my my regiment. But however, I thought in the back of my mind that I was going out as an advance party to our brigade going out to Egypt.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I had in the back of my mind all the arrangements that I would make for when my regiment came out, I could take command of it again.
Yeah, I see. Yeah.
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 So, however, we got on board a ship called the Highland Princess. A fellow called Pat Bogart. He afterwards became Brigadier of the RCRs. Brigadier Pat Bogart. He and I were on this ship, and we went had to go around the Cape because it was unsafe to go through the Mediterranean.
Yeah, yeah.
And we went round the Cape and finally landed at Suez, I think. Then we took a train up to Cairo, and then from Cairo we had to find a hotel, and then it was in the middle of the night, and on the ship there was a girl called Mary Foreman. She was going out to the British Embassy in Cairo to be a cipher clerk, and she was with us, and it was in the middle of the night, and we had to find a place to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So Mary Foreman and Brigadier Bogart, he was then Colonel Bogart, and myself, we got a great big captured German truck. I bet it was a 5-tonner or something.
Oh, really? Yes, large.
Driven by a British Tommy, and we drove all over Cairo trying to find a place to stay. And at last we found a hotel which had 2 rooms in it and a bathroom, and we put Mary Foreman up in one room, and Pat Bogart and I slept in the double bed in the other room. And that's the best we could do.
Yeah, there were no facilities for transients like yourself.
No place to go at all.
No military facility at all.
So the next day, of course, we helped Mary Foreman with her luggage and a taxi to go to the British Embassy, and we went along and reported to headquarters, commanded then by General Auchinleck.
Mm-hmm.
And we were given an office, and we started in to make our plans as to where we were going to do and what we were, where we were going, what we were going to do. So Pat Bogart went with the infantry and the other arms, and I went with the armoured people, and we agreed that he would report mainly on the infantry, and I would report mainly on armor, but of course we overlap.
Yeah, we'll have,
but,
yeah.
That would be the idea. Mm-hmm. So, amongst other things, I went up to an armored corps school in Palestine and drove across the... I went there by train, and after I'd attended this two-week course on armored training, which they were running at a place called Hadera in Palestine, I stayed with the Nottinghamshire Hussars, and the Colonel Kellett was a member of Parliament, but he was an awfully nice fellow, and any time he went away, he left a little note to tell me where he'd gone and when he'd be back. Mm-hmm. In my tent, you see.
You were living in tents there, weren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, yeah. So, I'd attend the school every day and then go back to Colonel Kellett's mess every night, every day. So, then the Nottingham Hussars were ordered up into Palestine, and their intelligence officer was told to go up ahead in a motor car, so I went with him. I had finished the course by this time, and incidentally, just then, I'd received word from Canada that I was to come back to Canada at the earliest possible moment. I'd been promoted to brigadier, and was to take command of a brigade in Canada.
For heaven's sake. And what did you feel you had accomplished in the far and the Near East in that time?
Well, I hadn't accomplished anything, I thought that, well, as the nearest, I motored across the Sinai Desert with this young fella all the way cross the canal at Ishmaelia, and all the way, motored all the way to Cairo, and then I went to see my friend General Auchinleck, who I'd known at the Staff College at Quetta, and he invited me to lunch, and I met a lot of all the senior officers there. He had a conference on, and so then I got transportation. And I went up the line, went right up to the front line, to the 1st Armored Division.
Sort of a last fling.
Yes, yeah.
Had you at this time put up your new rank, or was that not...
I had it in my pocket, and I think I put on, after I'd arrived at the 1st Armored Division headquarters, I'd been announced as Brigadier, but I think I had a couple of stars, so I put them on my shoulders, but I hadn't got any proper brigadier's uniform. Mm-hmm. So I was up there for about a week or 10 days, and General Lumsden was commanding the 1st Armored Division, and I learned all I possibly could about armor and armored fighting and one thing and another, and then finally, after I was up there about 10 days, I then made my way across to where the infantry were, near a place called Gazala, and I found Pat Bogart, who was attached to an infantry unit there, and I had a chat with him, and then I started back down the line. I stopped off at Tobruk, and I spent the night there, and I remember there was a bombardment, I think mostly anti-aircraft or something, during the night. And then I went on down and down all those places.
Benghazi and...
Hellfire Pass. Oh no, I didn't get up as far as Benghazi.
You didn't get up there, you went straight.
I went back through Bardia and Hellfire Pass and Saloum and then Mersa Matru and Sidi Barani and El Alamein, and finally got back to Cairo. And then I had to buy some civilian clothes and get a civilian passport to get back to England because I had to stop off at various neutral places, you see.
So that was the way the transport ran?
Yes.
Oh, I see. In order to get there direct, you were, yeah. You were flying, were you?
Yeah, well, I flew down to Khartoum.
Yeah.
And then I flew across Africa to Kano in northern Nigeria, and then I flew down to Lagos. Then I couldn't get a plane to get me any further. All the planes were full up, and I was held up in Lagos for a month.
Good gracious, yeah.
And here
was what did the Canadian Army think of that?
They were here was I to get back as soon as possible, you see. Well, finally, there was another brigadier, the British Army, held up the same way that I was. We were both staying with General Hawkins, commanding the Nigeria district, mm-hmm. and who treated us very nicely. And then we got on a Norwegian freighter, which was to get us home. And we were on it for 2 days, and it stopped off at a place called Takoradi, mm-hmm. and announced that it was going to stay there for 3 weeks and load on manganese ore. Well, we knew that there was a big air station at Takoradi, so we got off there and we scrounged a ride from Takoradi to Sierra Leone. Well, I remember we stopped off in Liberia. This African states, you know.
Yes. Yes.
And we had to put on our civilian clothes there and go there and have lunch. Then we got back on the plane and we flew to Sierra Leone. We then went and stayed with, I can't remember the general's name, but anyway, he was the commander of the Sierra Leone garrison. And we were there for about a week or more, and finally there was a commando ship. It's a little ferry boat that plied between Liverpool and Belfast, I believe. But anyway, it was a small ship and it was full of bullet holes because it had been at Narvik. And there was a very fine fellow. He was a lieutenant commander in the Naval Reserve. He was the captain. And on board were about 50 commandos, and I remember 50 tons of gelignite as well.
Oh, great.
And
yeah.
There were also several shipwrecked merchant skippers that had gone down in that area, and three or four officers who had been torpedoed on the Barham, the big battleship,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And altogether we were quite a motley crew. So we got to the Azores, and where we took on oil. And then we left the Azores and started off to Scotland, and we ran into the most dreadful Atlantic storm. I was so seasick that all I could do was to put on all my clothes, it's cold as anything, put on all my clothes, Sam Brown belt and everything, and wedge myself in my bunk and stay there. I was so sick that there's nothing I could do. And while I was lying in bed, I overheard over the loudhailer that all hands were required to go and assist, because one of the portholes in the bottom of the ship, in the side of the ship, had been staved in with a wave.
Oh, boy.
So I didn't go because I knew I could be useless. So one of the merchant skippers told me afterwards he thought we'd had it because the water was just pouring in. But they got the boatswain
off one of the sunken merchant ships. He was an enormous great big fellow, and they put his bottom in the porthole and held him there while they got a lot of materials in order to shore the thing up.
That's crazy.
And they finally shored it up, and anyway it was safe, and all the furniture in the wardroom was all up against the wall, and for 3 or 4 days we just had to eat biscuits and
what was the name of this extraordinary ship?
I can't remember. Can't remember the name of it. It's a little ferry boat. It's a boat tall, probably about about 1,000 tons, probably.
Oh, really? That's small.
Yeah, it was very small.
Oh, gosh.